Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Good morning, dear listeners. This is Karuna Munshi signing in with Morning Glory on Thursday Live. I'd like to begin by telling you that I'm late in signing in by a good 16 minutes. And the reason for that being that we had Houston, we have a problem moment here in the studio. So there was a major technical glitch with which my colleague, Brother Sunil, the audio engineer, has just resolved. I apologize for any inconvenience this has caused. On that note, let us begin Morning Glory with these inspired words penned by Mr. Joel Riordan, a Hollywood film producer, director, and writer. And I've taken these words from Ms. Diana Baskin's book, My Divine Memories of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, pages 112 to 113. And for all you know, this could well be Swami's letter to you and I this morning. So please, take a moment to open your hearts and receive this message as Bhagwan's blessing. It goes like this. Dear loved ones, you ask, how will you know when I am near you? When, on a sultry night, everything is hot and still, the first cool breeze brushes your cheek. I am caressing you. Think of me. When the pangs of hunger are satisfied and loneliness is pierced by happiness, think of me. When your mouth is parched and you can hardly speak, with the first sip of cool water, I'm soothing you. Think of me. When the cloud of death disappears first on the opening of a baby's smiling eyes, think of me. When I sprinkle your face with rain and wash the earth, the dry brown leaves with the first smell of clean rain, I'm cleansing you. Think of me. When the pain dissolves and fear disappears, think of me. When steadfast eyes are horrified by the cruelties of life, with the first glances of the silent setting sun, I am comforting you. Think of me. Then you ask, how will you know when you are near me? When the burning sun has scorched you and the earth, the sand, the dust fill your eyes, not a sliver of shade about you, and you still love me. When loneliness is accompanied by hunger, and not one can be satisfied, and you love me. When your lips are cracked, your tongue feels like clay, your throat seals up, there is no water about, not even a mirage in sight, and you love me. When you stir the ocean to a crescent, you flounder in its depths like a leaf, and you love me. When I take from you your most cherished possessions, on the first loss of your sight, darkness envelops you, and you love me. For everything you see, hear, taste, smell, or touch belongs to me. So how can you give me what I already am but your love? And that I gave to you before time began as your sole possession. When you return to me, then I will know you are truly mine, and I will dissolve your sorrow and happiness into me. That, being me, I will place you in bliss forever, for I love and think of you constantly. From your loving Father. Wow, those were some very powerful and soul-stirring words. And with these messages, I think the Lord has set the bar very high for all of us as devotees. And what's even more interesting for me is that today I have my colleague, Brother Arvind Balasubramaniam, once again in the studio to conclude our ongoing in-house Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with him. This is going to be the final part, which is part 3. After speaking to Arvind Balasubramaniam, I will play for you the second part of our ongoing Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. H.S.D. Srinivas. My colleague, Brother Bishop Prushti, has conducted this interview, and I know you will find loads of inspiration and divine joy by listening to it. So first things first, Saira, my name is Karuna and I once again welcome you warmly to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. It is exactly 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is Thursday, February the 5th, 2015. And this broadcast is coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual epicenter of the universe. Current temperatures in the ashram, 23 degrees Celsius. We're expecting daytime highs of 31, overnight lows of 17 degrees, in Celsius of course. Clear skies, pleasant breeze, zero air pollution levels add to the beauty of the Divine Valley. And on that pleasant note, I'm delighted to welcome Radio Sai's Arvind Balasubramania to this live conversation. Sairam Arvind, and welcome to Morning Glory.
Sairam Didi, and as always, it is a pleasure and privilege to be able to speak from Swami's own radio station.
Indeed. And I see you're quite enjoying these sessions now, aren't you?
Definitely.
And I'm pleased to inform you, Arvind, that so are our listeners, which is very gratifying.
Yes, I'm very happy to hear that.
Yes, indeed. And now let me begin by stating a simple fact that, you know, you've been an outstanding... Oops. Dear listeners, I never put on Arvind's microphone and that was my fault. So Arvind, I apologize. I just forgot, got carried away. So dear listeners, Arvind confessed he's enjoying being here and he's happy to be here. So now I'll continue the conversation. Arvind, you're quite an outstanding student of the Sai University and an active member of Team Radio Sai. And from all that I hear from you, it appears that you're poised to live and serve the Sai mission right here in Prashanthi along with your family. So people like yourself, that is young Sai students, especially alumni members who are serving the mission, what do you all envisage as the plan going forward? What's next?
Well, Didi, this question is very profound and, you know, it is very deep at the same time broad. So let me go to the depth parts first.
Sure.
So I want to take you back to 1975 when Bhagwan delineated himself the objective of the Sri Sathya Sai organization and any other institution that's part of it, whether it's the academic one, the educational one, the hospital one, anything.
So a 52-year-old Sathya Sai Baba?
50-year-old. Mm-hmm. 1975 was the golden jubilee
year. Okay.
Year of the Advent.
Okay.
So during the Second World Conference that was held, in fact, this discourse, this rare discourse, we don't have it in our archives. We found it in audio spools. It has been digitized and is being offered as a Sai Blossom product called the Golden Jubilee Celebrations. In that audio, I think it was the second discourse of the Second World Conference, when Swami said, there's only one caste, the caste of humanity, one religion, the religion of
love,
one language, the language of heart. And the interesting thing was, he said, there's only one God, he's omnipresent, he is Sathya Sai. And then everybody burst into applause, you know, they were so thrilled because we rarely hear Swami speak about himself.
Yes.
But Swami began to speak over the applause, cutting the applause short, saying that you are all clapping because you think I'm referring to this 5-foot frame standing in front of you. Then Swami said, Sathya Sai is one who is Sathya Shai, one who rests on Sathya, which is truth. And then Swami said, see, I will tell you one small example. You sit in a cart and you feel you're moving slowly. You sit in a car, you feel you're moving fast. But as you sit on a chair over here or you stand, you feel you are stationary. But you know that the earth is traveling at so many thousand miles per hour. So how can you say that you are stationary? You say that you are stationary in spite of knowing the movement of the earth, because what appears to be the truth and what is the truth are different. And Swami gives another beautiful example. He says, you see a solid wall here.
Mm.
You call it a solid wall because you can't see what's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see, if you ask your scientists, they will tell you that the wall is made up of atoms, which are in turn made up of the nucleus and the electrons. 98% of the atom is empty space. Now, when the wall is constituted 100% by atoms, which are 98% empty space, shouldn't you call it empty space? Why do you call it solid? Swami said, that is because what appears to be the truth and what is the truth are different.
Very deep indeed.
And then Swami makes the statement, he says, there are people from 50 countries gathered here. I think that time it was only 50 countries. Today we have it in more than 120 countries. And Swami said, all of you are one. You know, at that time you may think, how are we all the same? I'm tall, short, dark, fair, male, female, so many differences. And Swami said, that is because what appears to be the truth and what is the truth are different. And it is in order to establish this truth that I am starting the Shri Sat, that I have started the Shri Satya Sai organizations. Mm-hmm. No other objective at all. Each and everyone must realize this truth that all are one. And I feel this was when Swami, you know, emphatically defined, and it is almost like the only change you can bring to this earth is transform yourself so that there will be one fool less. Don't try to, you know, change others, or just you first transform yourself.
If every fool takes charge of himself and herself, we'll all do better.
Exactly. And you know, transform ourselves means change into what? And for that, Swami has set a, even, you know, it's the greatest and ultimate benchmark. Swami says you need not transform yourself. He says like a rock which has hidden in it the idol of Lord Krishna.
Right.
The sculptor just has to cut away those pieces which is not Krishna, and Krishna stands revealed. You have to give up all the false notions you have about who you are and realize your reality, which is God. And I feel, you know, in that 20th March episode, 20th March 2011, unforgettable, when on the face of it, it appeared as if Swami wanted to raise both his hands to grant Abhayasta.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, in a moment of forgetfulness or whatever,
he joined his
hands in prostration. You know, at that moment, it appeared like, oh my God, the Lord made a mistake. The Lord never makes mistakes. And you know, looking back at it, I just felt Swami was saying, my dear children, all my life I have been telling you that I am God, but so are you. It is time that you see God in all, because that is the truth. And the truth remains the truth irrespective of what you believe. You may not believe in gravity, but if you step off the building, you're going to crash to the floor. Gravity does not depend on your belief in it or not. In the same way, whether you believe it or not, you are God. And here, let me show you. See, I'm ready to bow down to all of you. Will you at least now believe? And I feel that's why it is very, very profound and poignant that was one of the last public gestures that Swami performed, because that is what he has been drilling into us throughout our life. Prema Swarupulara, embodiments of love.
Divya Swarupulara.
Divyatma Swarupulara, yeah, embodiments of divine Atma. You are God, I am God, all are God, all are divine. So I feel the way ahead in the ultimate sense for all the institutions, for all of us devotees, for the alumni, everybody, is to be able to see God in all and realize God in all.
But still, some may question, Arvind, that why can't we simply be good human beings, mind our own business, keep our noses out of other people's business and stay out of trouble, and, you know, do quiet naam japa in our own privacy, not get involved with, you know, in this business of trying to see God in others, you see things which are not sometimes pleasant. I don't like politics, I don't like all this. So why do we need to see God in all?
Didi, because the only thing that can liberate us is the truth. And this is the truth. Swami gives a beautiful example. He says, there are cells which constitute the tissues. The tissues which make the organ, and the organs which make this wonderful human body. Now, there are organs in our human body which we don't even speak of, because they are gross, they are not good. But can we do without those organs?
Mm-hmm.
We cannot. And then, you know, Swami compares, he says, the proper study of mankind is man. If you want to understand mankind, understand man. And then Swami says, look at the human body. Every cell has to work perfectly. And then that is how the tissue will work fine. Every tissue has to work perfectly. That is how the organ will work fine. And in return for every cell and tissue working fine, the organ nourishes and takes care of the tissue. Swami says, in the similar manner, we have a hierarchy, which is the individual vyashti, the society samashti, the creation nature, that is srishti, and God Parameshti. Now, all of us as cells, individual cells, want to have a connection with the body, that is with God. We want to love God. But how can a cell say that I love the body, but I won't take care of the tissue and the organ?
In isolation, just by myself.
Yes.
In my little bubble.
Exactly. That is just not possible. You can't. Because if you care for the body, the cell has to take care of the tissue. That is, we have to do something for society.
Yeah.
The cell has to take care of the organ, which is I have to do something for nature. I neglect society, I neglect nature and tell, you know, I want to build up a connection with God. How is it possible? You know, Didi, one simple example,
yeah.
There is this conflict going on in Syria, Pakistan. You know, there is a lot of hypocrisy in our responses. For example, there was a bombing in France, Charlie Hebdo, and you know, a million people marched in protest. But when 153 children were gunned down in Pakistan, we didn't see even 10,000 people walk in protest. I'm not saying it's wrong that 1 million walk there. But somehow, for us, we feel some lives are more important than the other. The eye is more important than the hand. It's like that. But if the human body has to stay whole, just imagine I'm in the little finger and there's a gangrene on the right foot. The little finger will feel, why should I bother? You know, the gangrene is there, the foot will take care. But if the gangrene kills the body, I as a little finger, I'm also dead. That is what the European nations are recognizing when Greece says that if you put such severe austerity measures, we are going to pull out. We'll start our own currency. Whole Europe can collapse. We are all connected in such a strong and subtle manner that we just cannot isolate ourselves, make ourselves into islands of prosperity amidst oceans of misery.
Exactly. And I think that's the, and this applies at all levels, spiritual, economic, financial. And I think some of the world's superpowers are beginning to realize that, that they cannot have that safety and that utopian lifestyles, which are materialistically very advanced, in isolation.
Exactly. In fact, you know, recently I was hearing a BBC podcast which said that when you think of doing good for the lowermost strata, financially, economically, that strata, the uppermost strata will benefit. But if you do only to the upper strata, the lower doesn't benefit. So it actually, you know, is selfishness when you go out and do seva.
Because from the grassroots up, the benefit will be greater.
The water and nutrition always goes from the roots to the top. To the top. Never the other way down.
Exactly.
And so we have to think of, you know, everyone, because we are all part of the same thing. That is what Swami is saying. So that is why Swami says, you love God, right? Now see that God in everyone. It is like telling the cell that you love the body. Realize that the organ is the body. Realize that the tissue of which you are a part of is the body. And therefore, you have to see God in everything.
Now how do we do that practically though? It's so tough, especially some people we don't know, others we don't like, others we may have difficulties with in getting along. So how does one see God in everyone practically?
Didi, you know, in one discourse when Bhagwan stated this, that all you have to do, the only sadhana you have to do in life is to see God in all. This was exactly the question that bothered me. As to Swami, it's easy to see God in my parents. I can do Pada Seva to them. But you know, this person, I won't name those people now, but this person, Swami, forget touching his feet. I can't even look at his face. I feel like going away. And if I speak to him, because Swami is such a bad individual. You know, that's what
you thought in your head.
Yes. But that is when, you know, a beautiful analogy Swami gave as an inspiration. And I'll present the analogy as it came. We have this famous Hindi movie called Sholay. Okay, in which we have Amitabh Bachchan.
It's a classic that anybody who watches Bollywood has to have seen.
Exactly. And Amitabh Bachchan, who is, I think, now worldwide famous, he is the hero in that. And there's Amjad Khan, who is the villain. Now, imagine a scene that happens in the movie where the hero is bashing up the villain. And Amitabh Bachchan is spewing out all profanities. He's telling, you are worse than a dog. I will drink your blood. And that's what Amjad Khan is also shouting back. And they're fighting, they're bashing up each other. They're red with anger, they're wild. Then the director says, okay, cut. Scene done. Good, great. And then the same Amitabh Bachchan and Amjad Khan will sit at the coffee table, have coffee together, and talk lovingly with each other. Which means, they actually have no hatred and anger towards each other. When they're doing the scene, they're doing it because that's the script, that's their duty. Amjad Khan can't say that, you know, Amitabh, I know you're a good guy. You also know I'm a good guy. Come. Then the movie is a flop. So for the sake of the movie, they're supposed to play their part. At the same time, in their heart, they encourage no ill will, nothing. In the same manner, suppose Amitabh Bachchan is in love with a woman there in that movie. You know, he's ready to give up his life for her in the movie. But in reality, he knows that, you know, there's nothing. There's no attachment towards her.
Just role playing.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he actually hates no one. He is not attached to anyone. But he is friendly with everyone because he knows everybody is just an actor. You know, I felt that this is if something we can incorporate into our day-to-day life. Now, when I have to, suppose I am with my mother. She has been given the role of my mother. I have been given the role of a son. I need not get attached to her because it just rolls. Next time it might get reversed. She might be my friend or I might be her father. I don't know.
And if you've been a difficult son growing up, maybe you're going to be the mom and mom is going to be the little naughty boy.
Yeah, that's what the
payback time.
That's what the director will do.
Yes.
You know, you didn't do a proper... But the thing I'm saying is, when we are acting, can I keep the feeling the same? Suppose I'm a mother. No, my child does mischief. What I mean by saying, taking the movie example is, it's not as if, oh, my child is God. So whatever the child does, I put him on a pedestal, put a crown and do Pada Puja because my child, you're God.
Hmm.
No. It is recognizing that it is God. So, but in this role, I'm the mother, it's the child and therefore I scold. I suppose his name is Kaushik. I say, hey Kaushik, that's not the way you do it. So though there is a harsh tone, in my heart, I'm supposed to have only love because I know after all it's an actor. My anger should be like the anger of Amitabh Bachchan towards Amjad Khan. And I feel that is what Swami did all his life. So when he says, Bangaru, I cannot live without you, be with me, it's not as if Swami has got stuck in the throes of attachment. That if I am gone, Swami is going to cry. And it's not like that. But at that time, that role demands it. And so he gives. And when Swami says, bad, I'll send you out, I don't want to see your face. It's not as if he's angry on us. It's not as if he's upset with us. At that moment, for us, we need that, so he's doing his role.
And
in his heart.
He's your chancellor and he's your teacher, so I think that gives him that right to
exactly.
correct us.
And all the while in his heart, but he has only love. Because I have seen this Didi happening. So mm-hmm. At times when Swami scolds and you instantly realize what a fool you have been, immediately, you know, repentance stem comes from your heart and a tear comes out and you say, Swami, oh God, what a mistake I made. You know, in an instant, he starts smiling. How is that even possible? I have not seen anyone do this.
He doesn't bear a grudge for long, this God of ours, he's
exactly,
so loving.
Exactly, because once the message you have received, the messenger ceases.
Yeah.
And he does the same. I have seen him scold a boy, for example, and he turns the other side and he's all mother love to the other boy there. You just imagine, Didi, you have been a mother. If you are upset with one child and you are scolded, at the other time the other child comes and says, Mama, can I do this? You know, you be quiet for some time. You just leave me alone. Because it's difficult.
Yeah. And then I'm upset with all the children and their father and the servant and everybody else for a while.
Which I feel we are doing it the opposite way.
Yes.
What we do is, Didi, we appear to be loving and sweet on the face.
Yes.
Inside we harbor all ill feelings, jealousy, greed, hatred. Swami says you do the other way. Show the anger, show the love, show the attachment on
so
the
play
outside.
Play your role appropriately
but
for
inside,
that moment. But
inside, have only love and realize that all are the same. I feel this is the way we have to start practicing seeing God in all. So when I get angry, is the anger on my face or is it in my heart? It's no use if I have a beaming smile on my face, but inside I am reeking with jealousy and anger. Instead, it is better that I have a cruel face which is intended to correct somebody, but in my heart, I have only concern and the feeling that the person in front of me and me are made up of the same Lord.
Yeah. It sounds so perfect what you're saying and you give very good examples. And I find we're not so forthcoming though in our behavior as a community of Sai devotees. One thing personally that I find lacking is the spirit of generosity to appreciate good work, to appreciate kindness in others. When people do good, we'd like to not particularly praise them or appreciate it. Not that they are looking for that endorsement. We don't want to sort of pretend that somebody else is a hero. I think that stems from our own insecurity. And whereas some people are very forthcoming and they'll say, that's very nicely done and thank you so much and it's so beautiful and always speak in a positive tone. I think that positivity to see good in others comes from a place of personal security and self-confidence.
Perfectly put, Didi.
And if you're a little bit on the insecure side, when others do great work, good work, we just look away or don't comment or pretend it's a given.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do something negative, oh, we are full of opinions and we have so much to say about that.
And this is another thing, Aditi, I felt Swami taught us. You know, Swami once gave an example. He said that a dog entered a hall of mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, 3 days back, I saw this happening on this Gopuram road.
Yeah, there's a mirror there, big one.
Yes. And there's a dog there that is barking at the mirror, you know, because... And Swami said when the dog enters a hall of mirrors, it starts barking. Because it feels that unless I show that I'm superior to all of you, these dogs may dominate me.
1,000 dogs are barking back at me.
And then Swami said that this dog pounced on one of the mirrors to show who's the boss. Swami said, what happened, you know? The mirror crashed, it shattered into 1,000 pieces, 1,000 new dogs started attacking this dog.
What a good example.
And Swami said, how should a human being behave in the world? He said, a human being walked a man walked into this hall of mirrors, and everywhere he saw, he was filled with only admiration, because he knew that whatever he's seeing is just himself. And then Swami, you know, so sweetly did that. He said, when he noticed a defect, you know, pointing to his hair, Swami said, he corrects himself.
Uh-huh.
And everything gets corrected. Swami said, if you notice a defect, that's because the defect is in you. Otherwise, you're just not able to see anything, because there's nothing wrong in Srishti. It's all in your drishti. And so
nature is, everything, creation around you is perfect. It's your vision that needs cleansing.
And so, Didi, coming back to what you said, so I feel that if somebody is able to appreciate someone, it's because that goodness lies in that person. But if I'm ready to jump onto the bandwagon only to criticize and I'm waiting for something negative to happen, it just means that I'm filled with negativity. And what happens is, we think of, you know, we want to create the perfect Rama Rajya, where everybody is beautiful, wonderful. But what Swami points out is with the example of Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. He says, look, both lived in the same time. It's not as if Kali Yuga is bad or these times are bad. No, both lived in the same time. Yet Prahlada had the most beautiful life. Hiranyakashipu had the worst of lives. It's because what each individual is made of. You can't change the world, but you can change your world. This is what even the Buddha discovered. See, when Buddha got enlightened, it's not as if deaths have stopped. It's not as if suffering has stopped. But Buddha's world changed.
Yes.
So Swami wants each one of us to change our world, because in the same world which we think is filled with misery and suffering, we will be able to see beauty and joy. And this will only happen when we are able to see everything as divine. And really feel that. It's not just speaking. You know what I do? If I see some neighbor get a car, I feel, you know, I want a car. But if I see my neighbor suffering, I feel, hey, that's also God. That's God's will, let him suffer. So when it comes to suffering, I don't feel that let me also suffer. It is the same whether me or my neighbor suffers.
We don't want to share that.
But we want to share this and get
good
more
fortune,
than the neighbor.
Yeah.
So that is hypocrisy. So either we go, fall back on the theory that we do good, we get good, we do bad, we get bad, and therefore do good. Or whatever happens is divine, therefore what am I crying about? Everything is good.
I know. You know, I noticed that the recent acts of violence in Paris that you made reference to and the attack on Charlie Hebdo, we saw a lot of pictures going through email and the office of Charlie Hebdo. There were several pictures of Swami on somebody's desk at the back, and there was a big picture of Swami with both Abhayahastas. And I was pointing it to someone. They say it's not a good idea to talk about these pictures because, you know, Swami was there and it happened. Swami is the witness to everything that happens. Sad things, not, and good things. He's an eternal witness, and all kinds of energies, positive and negative, have their parts to play. And we just have to recognize that everything that is happening, everywhere darkness and light will coexist.
Exactly, Didi.
And the nature of darkness is to create...
The nature of light is to create shadows.
Shadows, exactly.
And, you know, very interesting, Didi, because when I gave this movie example, somebody was saying, see, if the director is directing the movie, why have sad movies? You know, why have somebody dying in the movie? Why create like this? You know, it is a nature of duality, that if you want to enjoy duality, if you want to enjoy sweet, just eat 10 chocolates, you'll stop enjoying chocolates. You need to eat something salty in between to enjoy chocolate. So it is a nature of movies. People are not convinced. You know, that is when again an inspiration struck. I said, have you seen the movies that are being produced by Hollywood or Bollywood? There are tragedies, right? Now, these are movies that we are creating on our own. Entirely the script is by us, the direction is by us, production. Why do we produce horror movies? Why do we produce tragedies? They say, because, you know, there's some joy in enjoying it, and come on, it's not real. It's just that we are enjoying it.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Swami will tell. Come on, this is not real. Just enjoy it. It's just a projection on the screen. So, basically, by all this, we are trying to pick convenient philosophy to assign blame onto God. Swami says, if you are happy assigning blame to God, then it's fine. But the problem is, we assign and still we are not happy.
Yeah.
Swami says, just be happy, because happiness is your swaroop, because you are all divine. So, again, it comes back to the same thing, that all of us have to realize that same divinity pervades all, and this we have to do via society and via nature.
But then what is our biggest challenge? If it's so simple, everything is divine, what is the biggest challenge that is preventing us from realizing this, and how can we overcome this?
Didi, I feel one of the challenges is putting into action these things that we know. We just don't have the faith. For example, you know, I was reminded of an episode that Professor G. Venkatraman narrated, which happened in his presence. There was this army...
General, somebody, yes.
Yeah, some rank in the army. And he was saying, Swami, what do I do if my superior tells me to do something wrong? Which I feel is immoral and against. Recently, I met Lieutenant Chinmay. He is one of my close friends. He's in the army. He was saying that in Sikkim, where they are, there are these people who are very innocent and sweet, and they have no concept of theft. So they just, wherever wood they cut, they keep the wood in heaps and go on. And then somebody else from their family comes and collects the woods and takes it home. They have no fear that when I keep it here, somebody will come and pick it off. He says, for example, his superior told that, you know, I saw a lot of wood lying on the way. Take one army truck, go load all the wood and come back. He says, now I'm in a big dilemma. Because if I do that, I'm stealing away their livelihood. But if I don't do that, I'm disobeying a superior. And disobeying a superior could lead to an extreme like court-martialing also. So when he told this to Swami, Swami said, you should go and talk to the superior lovingly and tell that this is not the way. He said, Swami, many times they don't listen. They just say, you just shut up and do it, because that's the way the chain of command works. Swami said, then don't do it. He said, Swami, then I'll get court-martialed. Swami said, so? Swami, my wife, children, we'll all be on the streets. Swami said, so? Swami, what do you mean, so? My life is ruined. Swami said, you have very, very little faith in God and Dharma. You are so confident that the power of the Lord can't protect you. Why do you think the stories of Harishchandra and Prahlada are told? Say, Swami, see, we glorify a soldier who dies on the border saying that he did it for the nation. This is my thought, this is not what Swami said, but if we have to become martyrs for Dharma, don't we think it's great? I mean, we think it's great to die for the nation, but for Dharma we don't feel the same. But what Swami said is that this is happening because of two faulty assumptions. One, you're assuming that things will be hunky-dory and good if you obey him, though it is immoral. Second, you're assuming that if you stick to Dharma, you will not be protected. Both are false.
Because Dharma will protect who abides by Dharma.
Exactly. And so I feel one of the biggest challenges is not that there is too much bad and there's no enough good, but the good don't have the guts to act. We just have to have conviction and act, and then see the miracle of Swami's love, how it will protect us. And that, you know, that will give such a joy. I'm not claiming that I've had the courage every time, but on every instance when I've had the courage, Didi, it has resulted in a beautiful experience and a great, you know, a great reinforcement that, you know what, when you're on the path of goodness and truth, no force on earth can touch you.
Yeah, and I remember reading somewhere that, you know, not only are those guilty who indulge in bad practices, so are those who remain a silent witness and do nothing about it.
In a discourse, Swami mentioned there are five kind of people who commit crimes. I don't know if I can recollect all five, but the one is who does the crime, second who encourages the crime, third is who knows about the crime and keeps silent about it, fourth is who witnesses the crime. Like this, you know, Swami mentions...
So you just can't be a silent witness and let it pass because everybody does and I don't want to do anything about it because I'll get into trouble or become unpopular.
Exactly. It is not as if we have to lead a revolution or a rebellion, but in my little sphere of influence, whatever I can do, that is what I'm supposed to do. I would, you know, quote one statement from this famous Shiva trilogy books.
Yes.
That have sold a million copies. Mm. In that he says, in a righteous war, you can't be a bystander. You're either on the side of Dharma or you're against it. Mm. If you're not a warrior on the side of Dharma, you are against it. And by Dharma, I mean goodness. So, I'm not saying that we pick up arms and fight. I'm just saying in our own sphere of influence. At some times, the max we may be able to do is just say a prayer and refuse to be party to something. In some cases, we may have the authority to say that no, under my supervision, this is not going to happen. So, the action that we take may vary. But action definitely has to be taken because that is what this whole world is about. The world is about action. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, nobody can escape action. So we have to just ensure that our action is in sync with the truth that everything is divine and I am as powerful as anybody else because I have the Lord as the Lord who is me. I am no different from the Lord. And therefore, I have to stand for Dharma. I have to do good in society. I have to do good towards nature. If we see today, you know, tsunamis are bashing up the earth. There are typhoons which are more powerful than ever before. It's like one cell going cancerous and then saying that the organ is failing. Because in that analogy, the cell is the individual and the organ is nature, the tissue being the society. If we don't take care of nature, nature is definitely going to hit back. And at that time, we cannot say that, you know what, I am actually very clean and green, why is a tsunami hitting my city? It's not like that. If one cell goes cancerous, you don't know, the organ dies and you don't know which gets affected.
And the mutation is spread.
Exactly. So each cell, it has to ensure, because you never know, tomorrow it might be your father or your child walking on the road, a tsunami hitting and dying. And as mankind, we'll be responsible for it. The same thing in society. If I degrade society, I pay bribes to get my things done, and tomorrow if I suffer because of a corrupt official, I complain about corrupt society, not realizing that I am encouraging it. So in our own way, we have to contribute to society, have to contribute to nature, then only we will be actually contributing to God, because this is part of God.
Arvind, I honestly have learned a lot by listening to you, and I've enjoyed this special episode of Life Fleeting Moments, because I realize that a lot of people are aware of many of your experiences, since you are an author of 2 published books and you have a very popular blog. So that's why I was keen to raise these issue-based questions with you. And personally, it has benefited me greatly, and I'm very confident so has it helped for our listeners.
Thank you, Didi. And I must really acknowledge gratefully that, you know, when it has been a beautiful experience for me, because I feel whenever this is spoken, I am the first listener, and I feel it is for my own benefit first that Swami makes this come. Thanks to you, you know, it has been a very educative and learning experience
for me too. We'll have to fight it out outside. It's for the benefit of you or I, because when I sit and listen to people talk so intelligently and so deep, profoundly, I think I also benefit. Perhaps I'm also the first beneficiary of that wisdom. Thank you so much. I am sure our listeners have a lot to say about this conversation, all 3 parts. Today's, last Thursday and the Thursday before. And dear listeners, I look forward to your feedback. I know for me it's a huge treat to just listen to people share what they have learned from Swami or what they have received from Swami. And that's why I so enjoy bringing the same to you. I will look forward to your feedback by email at listener@radiosai.org. And I'm now honored to bring you part 2 of my colleague Mr. Bishu Prushti's Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. H.S.D. Srinivas. Now, this is really very interesting and profound also, and I urge you to send us feedback to this interview as well after you have heard it. This will be followed by Professor G. Venkatraman, who will sign in live at 11 a.m. Dear listeners, I thank you for your company. Happy listening ahead, and Jai Sai Ram.
What were you doing in Ames? So the very first day, we were taken and there was an open heart surgery going on. And 4 of us were crowding around the patient. And all of us were looking at a heart for the first time. And one of us actually fainted.
Oh my God. See all the blood and all that.
Yes. So he fell down on the floor and he was taken to the... So that's how...
Oh my God.
So that's how Anil got into OPD.
Okay. So he cannot see blood.
So I was engineering background. They said, okay, you know. So biosciences background students were taken for operating room.
Okay.
I was kind of left with the other choice of working in cardiology.
Okay.
So got trained in cath lab and...
But cath lab, for the benefit of listeners, probably you can just mention what is a cath lab in layman terms. And I'm sure, I mean, to work there, you have to have some sort of a medical background, isn't it?
Yes and no. See, it's a regular... All these... technical jobs that we were supposed to carry out. I don't think in India we had any long-term programs. It was all diplomas offered. But abroad, it's a 3-year or 4-year program. Either if you want to become an operating room perfusionist or if you want to work in a cath lab as a technician. See, India, we had only... It's pretty rudimentary at that time, you know, only in that particular decade, I guess, cardiac sciences and others were getting popular. Subsequently, it became a 3-year undergraduate program. But cath lab is basically about imaging the heart. So you have advanced X-ray equipment and there is a contrast which is injected into your heart arteries or different parts of the heart. And then you take a film, a high frequency film. And those days we still had to develop it manually in a dark room. So angiofilms were a guide to the condition of heart and a necessary diagnostic tests before a surgery. So majority of our work was diagnostic. Subsequently, over the next 10 years or so, cath labs have become virtually the place where 80 to 90% of heart disease can actually be repaired. You know, you can actually do interventions like angioplasties and valvuloplasties and other things.
So was it difficult for you, I mean, getting into all this with no medical background?
See, the difficulty was for the doctors in AIIMS to accept that we will stick on. So they were constantly questioning, are you guys really going to do this work? Are you guys going to really work on these? Is it really that you are okay with this kind of jobs?
Yeah, because you are an engineering and a management graduate and you are doing actually, which is practically a technician's job, right?
Yes, it was technical jobs. They were all technicals, but technician's jobs. Mm. But the way Swami had given, he was like, we were feeling almost like we were the owners of this hospital. Right? So, I guess we threw our weight around a little bit, quite a bit. So, if you ask any of the doctors those days, they will say, yeah, these guys, what do they think of themselves? I don't know. So, I guess we acted quite a bit. So, but the sense of ownership was very, very high.
Hmm.
That, look, we have come prepared to do anything, to learn the trade and either this or anything else that is assigned to us, we will do.
Yes.
So that was the single resolve which we had made in front of Swami and we wanted to carry out. So I guess each one of us was motivated and wanted to do something back for Swami for all that he has done. It's, again, I wouldn't even put it that way. We just wanted to have a lot more good time with Swami than 2 years. And this was the chance to be in his pet project, to be still there and to do something back. So that desire to continue the association, to be there. So there were a lot of shake-ups. I mean, even why doctors, even Swami had a lot of times questioned, you know, in front of parents, yeah, what will you do after MBA? You'll become MRS and, you know, you will...
You'll marry.
You'll marry, you'll go off.
Mm.
Go, go, go. That's what you're all going to do.
Mm.
And then we had to do, no, Swami, we want to be with you. I want to serve you. I want to, I will never marry. And all those kind of drama. Not drama.
Yeah.
Maybe those days genuine desire to be there.
Yes.
And Swami used to, you know, in front of parents, he used to almost, I would imagine every 2 months or 3 months he would test us, saying that, okay, now, you know, next year this fellow is finishing his MBA, get him married.
Yeah.
Okay, next 3 months he is going to finish his MBA, now get married. And every time we have to tell that, no, 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 we want to be here, we want to work for you, anything is fine. I don't mind working even in canteen is what I told him once. He said, what? I invested so much on you in MBA just for you to become a canteen guy? No, no, I'll give you something better than that. So he was, so there were these preparation, I would imagine,
he was prepared.
Happening that, you know, and also every interaction, every touch of his, every time he glances at you, there is something that he, some of the impurities that he would remove. And he would strengthen you, fortify you, your own resolve. So, and I, in my case particularly, I always had this feeling that I'm slightly weak over there. That I don't have a strong motivation. I used to feel that I, you know, maybe I'm not cut out for the spiritual path. Maybe I'll fall too quickly prey to all the temptations of life. Maybe I'm not this, maybe not. So Swami's words were like those, you know, they strengthen you so much. And he knew exactly what the vulnerabilities of each of us was. I don't know about others, but definitely for me, in my case, he always tried to say that, look, you are only as much as you think you are. So if you really think you cannot do anything, you will never be able to do anything. If you think you can achieve everything in this world, you will achieve everything. So that's the feeling he always perpetuated. That is the motivation, that's the support he gave. So personally, I mean, I don't know how to, these are not things which you can really share, but I guess that's how he molds, I guess, everyone, each one of us. And definitely in my case, I must have given him a lot more headache than a lot of people. Because the way, so I read a very beautiful thing about Swami that, you know, for you guys what, you know, it's a world that changes. For me, I have to change every single individual. And only I know the pain of how, what is the makeup of each guy and what exactly, which lever should I be pressing to change you guys. So I guess, you know, once you've accepted him as God, and then I have faced these questions hundreds of times in the last so many years, people are still worried that, oh, can he materialize things? Can he cure sick people? Oh my God, how? I mean, those were all like given for me, that once you have accepted his God. To me, the greatest thing was he's able to change a person's life. He's able to change someone's perspective. I think that was his greatest thing for me, at least through his love, through his very persistent support in all kinds of frailties that we display. I think the way he was there with us at every turn of our life, he is there. That only, so that's why he's God. I mean, it's not because he cures people or he materializes things. Those are anyway given. But the fact that he is able to instill that sense of, you know, being one with him, I think that's why you just have to simply accept that he's God. So these were, there were a lot of these small little things that he used to push us towards the right path, remove all our frailties.
Any instances come to your mind? I know these are, I think, very, very personal in nature. But are there any occasions in your student days or in the initial days in the hospital where, you know, through one of those 2-3 instances, you know, he changed your perspective so much about how you think about a particular aspect of your life?
Okay,
or
I'll... So there was this always feeling that, you know, once you come to Swami, or Swami is the only God, and everything else is not God. So that's something, I guess, I have observed even now in a lot of places where, you know, people think that, oh, after coming to Swami, why do you go to Krishna? Why do you go to Srama? Why do you go to Raghavendra Swami? Why do you go to Balaji? Once you have accepted Swami, Swami is the whole and soul for you guys. I am not judging. I am only sharing my experience. So what happened one of those days was my father and mother had come down to Puttaparthi, and they were... those days the accommodation was not so much, and it happened to be Swami's birthday time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I, 65th birthday time. So I had the good fortune of... 65th birthday. So I was one of the pallbearers for the... Not pallbearers, I don't know what you want to call
them. The torchbearers?
Yeah. So please remove the word pallbearer. So I was one of the two students chosen to walk in front of the...
during the convocation?
Yes.
Convocation. You hold the...
mace. Not the mace. The mace is disc. Held by... Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think you're holding those two silver...
Yes, staff.
Staffs, yeah.
Right? So, I was one of the two chosen. a very beautiful thing happened when we were getting ready in the mandir, trying to see the positions, how it should be, where we can stand. Suddenly Swami came from behind. And he used a very beautiful word. He said, "Oh, so you guys want to walk with me?"
Oh.
And so it was a very small passing by comment, but later on when I was ruminating over it, it had so much meaning. Oh, can we really walk with God? Wow, I was thinking, if that's the, if there is a choice, why not?
So, literally you did at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I always kept thinking, that, okay, so that's how it started, is it?
It's how it started.
So, yeah, so those days my parents had come down, they didn't have any accommodation to stay, so one of our lecturers had very graciously agreed to put them up in his house.
Oh, okay.
And so they stayed in staff quarters during that 1 week, and as a parting gift, he gave a book on Mandukya Upanishad to my father.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the birthday, Swami was giving a lot of interviews, and he told me to call my parents in 3-4 days after the birthday, I guess. So my father came in, and during the course of interviews, he was taking people inside the interview room, the smaller one, and then we were all like, you know, waiting in the bigger interview room. Then I happened to see that my dad brought this Mandukya Upanishad given by our lecturer to him. So immediately I told him, "Daddy, why did you bring this? You should have brought Swami's book. You know, Swami's, you could have got it signed by him." So my dad was slightly hurt when he heard those words from me. And so at the end of the interview, people were giving Swami's photographs and books for his signature. My dad held back. He did not offer this book. So Swami was signing everybody. He was seeing that my dad is hesitant to bring this book forward, and so he finished everyone. So he looked at my dad and told, "Em Seshgir Rao, Yemantadu Veedu?" And he used exactly the same words I used in Telugu. He was inside that room, and there was no way he could have heard those. He used exactly the words, "Daddy, endu iskochari pustakam? Swami pustakam techukuni unte baagundedi kada, ilagannadu kada veedu." And then he took that book, he was signing it.
Oh my God, just say that in English for the benefit of our listeners. It's just amazing.
So he just repeated word to word the tone and exactly what I told my dad. "Daddy, why did you bring this book? You should have got one of Swami's books." And I was like reeling. We all know that Swami knows, he's omnipresent, but that was the first time he was kind of displaying that, "Look, I know whatever happens everywhere, especially in the interview room." But he used those words, and there was no way he could have just heard it in a physical sense. When he used that, and at the end of it, he added very significantly, "Is this not my book? Have you confined me only to this form and this name?"
He said that.
He said that. He said, "Do you think I am only this?" Showing his form. Is this book not mine? Am I not there in this? That kind of shattered, it gave a total perspective about the universality of God. That anything good in this world is God. Anything that speaks the glory of God is Swami. So Swami is not confined to what we call Satya Sai Baba or his writings or his things. In those matter of 2 minutes, what he taught me was something totally, I'll never forget those things. And it changed my entire perspective. Otherwise, we tend to fall into this very narrow definition of Swami being Satya Sai Baba, Swami's words, Swami's works being only the books he has written. But when he used those words, and told that, look, even this is, because it was Mandukya Upanishad, he said, I am Vedam. So in other words, or whatever is written about God is me. Or in whichever way it is, he brought out that universality of his outlook, that don't confine me only to this form and the body and these works. And that was something which I always treasured. I don't say that, you know, whenever, if I have to go to a temple, and it is maybe Shiva temple or Venkateshwara's temple, I look at that form as Swami only. Yes. I think Swami is here.
Yes.
So that is something very, very universal that he taught. It was some, and I tell you, a very, very beautiful instance subsequent to my leaving Puttaparthi and joining EMRI. So EMRI those days, we were running about 50 to 60 ambulances in Andhra Pradesh. And the government had just decided that they'll add another 100 or 120 rural ambulances in Andhra Pradesh. This was 2007. Sometime in March, the decision was taken. So I proposed to our management committee that why can't we start rural healthcare services from Puttaparthi? So it's a very, you know, I don't think there were many devotees, so to say, in our management committee. People were slightly skeptical because this fellow is coming from Puttaparthi. He says, let's start in Puttaparthi. Can we start everywhere, wherever people want? So it was shot down.
Okay.
And exactly in a matter of 3 weeks, my CEO comes and asks me, Srinivas, you were proposing that we should start from Puttaparthi. Do you think it's possible? Will Sat Sai Baba agree for this? Can we start the rural health services, rural EMRI from Puttaparthi? I said, sir, if we sincerely request him, he will definitely agree. So, a so-called non-devotee, someone who only knows Sat Sai Baba as head of another institution, wrote a letter saying that, Swami, we are also working on the ideals you have taught the mankind. So we also want to save lives. So this is a noble project. With the help of government, we are expanding it. We would like to launch the rural expansion from Puttaparthi. Kindly allow us. So I brought that proposal to Puttaparthi. And of course, I could not send directly to Swami. I went to some of the officials here. And they flatly rejected it.
Oh.
On my face, saying that this is nothing to do with Sat Sai organization. There is no involvement of Central Trust or any of the things. Why are you bringing government things into proposals to, you know, why are you trying to bring Swami into all these things? I was slightly disappointed, mightily disappointed. I was sitting for darshan and wondering where I have done wrong, because back, if I go back to office saying that this is what the officials here feel, I can't show my face again. What is this? I have landed. But I was pretty strong that if only Swami knows, he will accept this launch. And one of our very revered teachers here, he happened to see me sitting in the students, old students area, and he said, what happened? Why are you here, and what's wrong with you? You look pretty downcast. I said, sir, this is what I did in my office. I convinced them that, you know, it's a good project and Swami will definitely agree to this and we should launch from Puttaparthi. And now I have come here and it's been shot down by the officials here. I don't know what to do. He said exactly these words. Srinivas, your thinking is 100% right. Any good work is God's work. Don't give up. Try. You know, try and get his... And somehow I could manage to send across that letter or request into Sai Kulwanthal. Not into Purnachandra those days.
Bhagwan's residence.
Yeah, so Swami read that and apparently gave his approval for that. Okay, you guys can launch on April 16th, the day after, I think, Malayalam New Year's Day. So apparently everything was okayed, and so we launched the service from Puttaparthi. There were two governmental representatives, two senior ministers of those days. They came and then they attended the launch. But the beauty was Swami, all the officials of EMRI were made to sit right next to where Dr. Safaya used to sit.
Oh.
And the moment Swami, and they all, Swami those days used to come out for darshan by around 6:30, 7 o'clock. On the day these people were, they got delayed in the train when they were coming from Hyderabad. So they all reached the mandir only around 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami delayed darshan.
Oh my
come
God.
Out till 8 o'clock. And after they were all seated, Swami came, went inside his interview room. And the moment he came out, he produced a gold chain and put it around our CEO's neck.
Oh my God.
And that is when the EMRI expansion took off.
Wow.
From about 70 ambulances, in the next 2 years, we launched close to 2,500 ambulances.
My God.
In about 8 to 10 states. And my CEO always felt that this was all only because Sai Baba blessed us on that day. He called us and he blessed us and told us go ahead and to do this good work. So that faith which he had ignited when I was just a student, that anything good is my work, anything good work is God's work. Don't confine me only to this body. Don't confine me only to this name, this form. I am all things good. I think that was a major, major perspective change that he brought about. And I still hold it. Whenever I see anything great happening, I know it's Swami who is inspiring someone to do something good.
Yes.
It may be a Catholic church doing good. It
yes.
may be a madrasa doing good. It may be a temple doing good. It's all Swami. To me, personally, yeah. I know it is Swami. And it's God who is inspiring things to do
when
things.
If anything fantastic happening, which is of good to the world, in some ways, there is that divine energy flowing through that person.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what Swami is, right? Swami
yes.
is not just only the form or the body or the thing. So that's when something major he taught during that time.
Wow, and I think that would have definitely bolstered you so much, right? After that, to go ahead and do whatever your heart says it is good, just go ahead and do. You know he's there.
Absolutely. I mean, when we start the hospital, when, you know, he was there all the time at every stage, hand-holding us, correcting our mistakes, ensuring what are the right things to do. There were a lot of times when we could have gone wrong, but he was there, you know, even to correct very small little things. And primarily, you know, and he used to kind of very keenly follow up on how many patients were seen, what kind of treatment was given, how have they been treated very well. Not 1 day, 2 days, or 1 year, or 2 years. But all my 14 years, I saw that he was very concerned for the kind of work that we do. Of course, the hand-holding was, when we were young, it was very strong. And gradually, he allowed us to walk. But he was always there so that we don't cross. So, it was a beautiful journey all through.
Amazing. I know we can go on, but it's already 11:20 in the night, and tomorrow is Bhagwan's birthday, 89th birthday celebrations, and I know you'd want to go to the mandir, having come all the way then be a part of the functions. I will not want you to tax you more. I will not keep you here for long. But thank you so much, brother, for coming. And I'm really so happy that we are talking today on this day, as you mentioned, when the hospital actually started 23 years ago. And I didn't plan for it, you know, it just happened that way. we are discussing about the hospital, and you are someone who has been so associated with Bhagwan's hospital, and subsequently trying to take in whatever manner the philosophy of Bhagwan's healthcare to wherever you are. Yeah, you have Bhagwan has placed you subsequently. So it's and the last 2-3 instances that you mentioned, so fantastic it is. I mean, God, I mean, it's so clear that Swami is not confined to that form. He's the one who is there everywhere, whoever he's praying to, whom they are praying to, that same universal consciousness. He was just a form. And whatever work you're doing, if it is something that is benefiting someone, it is definitely his work. And I think those are such major takeaways. Through you, Bhagwan has given all of us. So thank you so much for sharing. And I really look forward to more such sessions, because I know you had such great time with Bhagwan. 14, 15 years working under him, and 2 years. Studying under at his lotus feet. So we really have to capture some of these priceless lessons that, you know, that Bhagwan has given you. And I hope that we will meet again. And I really want to express my deep sense of gratitude to Bhagwan for having enabled for this to happen today. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine. The honor is mine.
Sairam.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live. Radio Sai.